Tired of the same old sports analysis? Then you need the SMQBs podcast. They're five attorneys, they're sports fanatics, and they're ready to make their case. Welcome to Sports Talk with an Edge. From Dallas, Texas, Ryan Pope. Michael Rooster Phelan from Richmond, Virginia. Patrick Milk Meichler from Tampa. Toby House Milrod from Philadelphia. Chris Bison Nace from D.C.
SFQB, this is episode 42. Before getting to number 42, Toby, I just have a quick question. Did the Eagles score yet?
Oh, come on, man. Let's focus on number 42 today.
That's no fun.
No, yeah. did the Eagles score more points than Harper averaged hits in the game?
I think if you're trying to congratulate Bryce Harper, it's a nice way of doing it. We're not going to talk about the Eagles this week.
Oh, yeah, we are.
Sean McCoy wants to talk about the Eagles. He wants to talk about Jalen.
We're going to leave him alone, but because this is actually a special episode. It's episode 42 for the SMQBs, and we come on here, and, you know, we sort of stay light and have fun on this podcast because that's what sports is. And we talk and have a good time with professional leagues and everything. But, you know, sometimes even the pros, the colleges, the local high school sports, even, they're not just always there for entertainment and for us joking with each other and busting each other's chops over it. They do often offer a sort of a window into the psyche of the country. And I know people look at sports as a distraction, and for even us, when we come on here, a lot of times we just want to laugh and have a good time and do that. But there are times where sports are a little more serious, that they require a little bit more heft, a little bit more care in how we talk about them. And this is episode 42. Those of you who listen know that we often lead in and talk about a great athlete who had a certain number. So, you know, number 41, we'll tee it up, and Phelan usually goes out there ahead of time and tries to do some research to guess it and get it right when everybody else sits there and does it. But this week with 42, it's pretty obvious that it only had to be Jackie Robinson. There's no question that we wanted to talk about Jackie Robinson. We have a treat today for everyone. But before we get to that, I just want to play a quick little clip to set this up, set the scene for us here.
Jackie Robinson. It was back about 1950, maybe 51, not more than that. And Jackie, who had received other threatening letters, apparently received one that was deadly serious and impressed the authorities. We were in Cincinnati for a weekend series to play at Crosley Field. The letter intimated the deed would be done on Sunday. Sunday morning, when the team was in the bus going to the dressing room, it was pretty quiet. And in the dressing room, it was very quiet. This was the most serious pre-game atmosphere probably in the game. Everyone was worried. And it was very quiet. And the Dodgers had a young left fielder by the name of Gene Hermansky. And Gene was colorful, bright, blonde, white, and fully you know what. And with this quiet atmosphere in the clubhouse, Gene suddenly said, "I've got it." And everybody looked and they said, "What?" He said, "We'll all wear number 42 and they'll never know which one is Jackie Robinson." Now that seemed funny at the day. In 1997, Jackie's number was retired. And in 2004, Gene Hermansky's words from 1950 came to fruition. "We'll all wear number 42. So tonight, when the Dodgers in Arizona line up on the foul lines, they'll be wearing 42. And all across the country, in every major league ballpark, every player will be wearing 42. And what does the 42 mean? It doesn't mean that they're all equal, not in the respect. Some are taller than others. Some are heavier than others. Some are left-handed. Some are right-handed. But the one thing they share in carrying number 42 is the fact that the man who wore it gave them the one thing that no one at the time could ever have done. He gave them equality, and he gave them opportunity. Those were the two things that many of those people never had to hold to their hearts when they first began to play. So yes, 42 is a great number. It means a lot for a great man, but it is a tremendous number when you think of the man who wore it with such dignity, with such pride, and with such great discipline. And wasn't it sweet that he had Rachel on his arm? Love you, Rachel. Thank you.
Mike, you want to take it from here?
Yeah, we have an awesome guest tonight. I am so excited to introduce my friend, my Ohio Wesleyan classmate, and a distinguished journalist and journalism professor, Jerry Bembry. Welcome to our podcast, Jerry. It's awesome to have you, man.
Hey, good to see you, Mike. Thanks for having me, guys. I love that clip from Vince Scully. I really enjoy it when they have Jackie Robinson Day and everybody's wearing that 42 jersey. And let's say happy birthday to Vince Scully. Today is 94 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. One of the best in the business in what he did.
Happy birthday, Vince.
Happy birthday.
Let me just brag on you for a minute, Jerry. Soon after we got out of college, in a pretty tough job market, Jerry, with like a few months of experience working for a small newspaper, landed a big time job at the Baltimore Sun, which back then was a major, major international paper. It's being gutted right now by a hedge fund, right?
Yeah,
unfortunately. And then went on to ESPN, where he was an NBA analyst. He wrote for ESPN, the magazine, reported for SportsCenter and Outside the Lines. And now, Jerry is a senior person at The Undefeated, which is a website owned by ESPN that describes itself as the premier platform for exploring the intersections of race, sports, and culture. I love The Undefeated, but I'm not sure everybody knows about it. Tell us about The Undefeated, Jerry.
Yeah, we launched in 2016, and we try to touch on some stories that maybe ESPN doesn't. We just bring a different perspective. And, it's been a great place. So, check out our content at theundefeated.com. I cover a little bit of everything. I cover golf. I cover tennis. I cover NBA, college basketball. When I was at the magazine, I was strictly an NBA guy, but here I can cover a little bit of everything. And I really enjoy the variety of stories that I get a chance to do. Right now I'm doing a TV piece for ESPN. Then I'll be writing an NBA story this week and then an NFL story next week. So it's just really a big variety and I really enjoy it.
Great, man. We have occasionally ventured into discussions on our podcast, sort of the same kind of concept, the intersection of race, culture, and sports. And indeed, I think you probably listened to this one early on when we covered the Rooney Rule one episode. And we all read your article about Stump Mitchell before that episode and found it to be really interesting. And then when we came up with this idea of, we need to honor Jackie Robinson and by doing so, maybe look at diversity in the front office of major sports, we thought who better than, the guy who kind of educated us with his article to invite. And so we were thrilled to have you on here. You know that a few weeks ago, Ken Williams, the executive VP of the White Sox, kind of reopened the discussion in Major League Baseball by showing up at the GM's meeting and saying, "Hey, imagine this is all reversed, and you're a white guy standing up here looking out at a sea of black GMs and executives, and you've been told for the last 25 years this is going to change, and it hasn't. How would you feel?" And, in light of that, we wanted to maybe revisit the Rooney Rule, talk about what's happening in major sports. I think there's at least 13 guys who were going to lose their jobs in the NFL offseason, including three from the Giants, the GM, the coach, and their second offensive coordinator. And, you know, is there any expectation that things are going to change? Or are we looking at the same old, same old? What do you think? And, what's the solution? What is the solution?
Yeah, that's the solution is easier said than done. You know, you look back at the year 2002, and there were two black head coaches, Tony Dungy and Herm Edwards. And you look back to the start of the season this year, and there were three. And then you count, you know, two other non-white coaches, Ron Rivera and the Jets coach. And it's a huge problem. You know, the Rooney Rule is in place to have ownership interview a person of color for every open position, but an interview doesn't get you a job, obviously. And we haven't made a lot of progress in that area. And, you know, Vince Scully, you know, spoke about, you know, equality and opportunity. I think that there have been people who have gotten opportunities over the years, but not enough. But in terms of the equality, I think that particularly in the NFL, I think you have a lot of old ownership, and the old ownership has an old set of ways. And, you know, let's face it, you know, people are going to tend to hire people that they're comfortable with. And if you have a entirely white ownership base, then you probably are going to lean in that area. And it takes someone that just has a lot of guts to really step outside the box and do something different. And, you know, hopefully the NFL can get this thing right. I think the NBA has done a better job. I think of the hires in offseason last year in NBA, more than half went to black coaches, which is great. But the NFL has a long way to go. You know, Major League Baseball, you can see why the numbers tend to be one way, because there isn't a large percentage of black players in baseball. And so that's why, you know, 20% of the head coaches are black in that. But still, I mean, that's better than what the NFL does. You know, the NFL is 13%, where 74% of players are of color. So, yeah, a lot needs to be changed. And I just think that it's going to come with a change in leadership, and you bring some younger people in who are a little bit more open-minded, a little bit more progressive, and that's when the real change will happen.
You you wrote about a group that was looking to bring a team, a black-owned team, to Oakland. What's come of that?
Yeah, and not much. You know, it's that was always going to be a long shot for them. You know, they don't have the built-in money that you need. You know, no one within that group is a billionaire. And right. It seems like that's what you need to have, that one individual with all of that backing. And there are also competing factions in the Oakland area as well that made it a long shot for them. But, you know, give them credit for throwing their hat in the ring. And, you know, they had a very viable plan where they were going to build a stadium and they were going to build an entertainment district. And that's what you want to see in these metropolitan areas, especially in the Oakland area with the old stadium is at. And it was just a long shot from the start, though. So I think it was very ambitious on their part. And it's not going to happen there.
Well, you know, one would think that these owners would be more interested in winning than being comfortable. And I, for the life of me, I don't understand Eric Bieniemy. What? Yeah. I mean, why is Eric Bieniemy not a head coach? Which
11 interviews?
You know, and we have this conversation about Eric every single year, whether it's on the NFL level or whether it's on a college level, and you know, he's always at the head of the list of as one of the most qualified people, but he never gets that shot. And that I'll never understand. When I wrote about Stump Mitchell, you know, he was resigned to the fact that he was going to be a career assistant coach. And I think the trend in the NFL is that, you know, when they hire a black coach, it's usually someone who's a little older when they take a chance with them. Whereas with other coaches, you might get them in their early 30s, you know, someone who is up and coming, and and you get more of a rope to deal with, because Jim Caldwell had back-to-back 9-7 seasons in Detroit and, you know, took them to the playoffs with no Pro Bowlers, which is unheard of in the NFL.
Right.
And they fired a guy. and his replacement. I mean, if you saw the game last week, you know, and just the embarrassing moves that the Detroit Lions make on the football field. And you wonder why that guy is still in place. So, you know, I thought Jim Caldwell got a raw deal. You know, he didn't have the most talented team in the world, but they did the best with what they had. And unfortunately, it cost him his job. So the figures show that when a black coach is fired, it's hard for them to resurface. Whereas with other coaches, you know, you might get another job in a year or two.
Right.
But with black coaches, it's a little more difficult when you get fired.
Toby will tell you that the Philadelphia Eagles, that Deuce Staley owned that locker room. The players wanted him. You know, most people in the organization loved him. And, you know, it's, I think you're right. It was like he's a young guy and just they just blew it by passing him over for Sirianni guy who nobody even heard of.
Well, that's the thing that I find the most frustrating in this conversation is that if you're, like Jerry says, if you're going to go for experience, maybe you've got an alibi. But if you're taking a chance, you're taking a chance on Dan Campbell, you're taking a chance on Nick Sirianni. Now, these are two teams where Deuce Staley has connections to. Deuce could have been the head coach of the Detroit Lions. Instead, they gave him second fiddle as the assistant head coach and the running backs coach. He did own that locker room and has an incredible – he would have been such a fan favorite as a head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. And you have two white coaches making boneheaded decisions that is not resulting in winning while, you know, Deuce Staley is, again, you know, the bridesmaid. Jerry, my question, though, is why is – the NBA succeeding? If the NFL is more than half black and if the NBA is more than half black, what is it about the NBA that has white ownership choosing to have black head coaches and the NFL won't do it?
I think one, the ownership is younger. You got guys like Mark Cuban who are in there, who's willing to take a chance. I think the commissioner, Adam Silver now, David Stern before, they realized the makeup of their team, of their league. They realized the importance of keeping the players happy. I think the players in the NBA have probably a level of input than any other league. And I think that that's a big influence, and they're not afraid to in the NBA, and particularly this year when they made the offseason hires, there were 8 coaching openings before the season started and 7 went to black coaches. And, you know, it was some guys like Chauncey Billups, who's a veteran guy, and Jason Kidd, who's been around. But then there's also a guy like Wes Unseld Jr. And
the guy on the Celtics, too.
Yeah. And Wes has been an assistant for 16 years in the league before he got his opportunity. You know, Wes didn't play major Division I basketball. He wasn't known for his basketball skills. He went to John Hopkins University and went right into coaching after that. And I'm sure his dad was a coach, but he had to rise through the ranks to get to where he is today. And I thought that was a gutsy move by the Wizards, who stuck with Scott Brooks for so long, to go with Wes Unseld Jr. And they're competitive this year. So I think just the NBA, it's a more progressive ownership in that league. And I think they're more willing to take chances in the NBA because it's easier to put, you know, the NFL guys obscured by helmets. And you know, I mean, we know that the 73% black, but we don't really see or connect with them. In the NBA, you're sitting courtside, you're right on the floor, and you have a connection with these guys. And you know, the social media of the NBA is through the roof, and there's a popularity there. And they realize the ownership, the league, that, you know, you want to keep these fans happy. You want to keep the players happy. And I think they make the moves right now with the coaches to really to do that.
Brian, go ahead.
Jerry, I think you hit right on head on the nail when you say that it's the leadership, because, you know, Roger Goodell serves at the pleasure of an all white male ownership group, you know, and he's not going to do something that would potentially put him in harm's way. Whereas Adam Silver, when Donald Sterling from the Clippers was in trouble for the hot water for those racist remarks, on his own, he basically stripped him of his ownership without even a vote by the Board of Governors, because that's just the kind of leader he is and set by example. You know, my coach at the time, Rick Carlisle, who's now, you know, with Indiana again, with the Mavs at the time, in 2018, you know, the players came to him and they said, we want to have some kind of equality for coaching. And so they created that group that has been real instrumental in developing the future leadership. And that's why we see 7 out of 8 new Black head coaches.
You mentioned, you know, Adam Silver and the situation with the Clippers, and you know, it's a case where there was near a mutiny going on with that team, and the player was about to walk off the court. And if I'm not mistaken, that was during the postseason, I believe. So we're on the verge of losing some playoff games, and that's how much power the players had. And, you know, the power comes with these players having guaranteed contracts. NFL, if you had any inkling of a player saying, you know, or players organizing a walkout, especially during the postseason with so much money involved, their contract can be removed from the team. You know, there's no guaranteed deals in NFL. I mean, you know, you might have the signing bonus money up there, and you might sign an 8-year deal and they can get rid of you in a year. So there are no certainties with the NFL. So in that situation, the players lack power. And I just think that, what, you know, Adam realizes that the power of the players had, and he acted accordingly.
Gary, the head coaches and the GMs, those get all the headlines, of course. They're the, you know, the top jobs. How do the leagues do? How are they all doing down the ranks as far as other coaches, assistant GMs, that sort of thing? Is there progress being made there, and there's all of a sudden a glass ceiling, or is this institution wide in these leagues?
Yeah, I think that the progress is being made in the NBA, and I think that that's the league that you know, everybody should try to emulate. But you look at you have some NFL assistant coaches who are Black, and you know, it's these position coaches like Stump Mitchell. You know, that's important to relate to the players on that level. But I think the NFL, the front office, is still a challenge, and even in the WNBA, I think that they can change. And you know, that's not a league that is as big and powerful as other leagues, but you know, they can do better there as well. So I mentioned baseball early, and it's going to be more difficult because the percentage of Black players, you know, when I was a kid, maybe back in the early 70s, you know, you may have had Black players maybe reaching 20%, close to that. And the numbers are really low now. So you don't have as big a pool to pull from in terms of getting the front office positions and the coaching positions. But they do. They have a better percentage. I think the NFL is the league that just lags behind everybody else. And I think that's because the ownership base is older and they're just not progressive people.
Jerry, how much of this is, you know, I'm from Tampa, obviously. The Bucks have two African-American coordinators, offensive coordinator Byron Leftwich and Todd Bowles. And, you know, I love to see what someone like Deion Sanders is doing at Jackson State. Like, guy does not need to go coach, but he's doing it. It's certainly not about money. He just wants to go and teach kids. But how much of this stigma in the NFL, and we're talking about a league that's 74% African-American, prevents these players from even wanting to get into coaching in the first place, to go and then become coordinators and become head coaches?
Yeah, Patrick, I think that's a good point. You know, you kind of see what's happened during the course of your career, which in NFL is relatively brief.
Right.
And you say, well, why even waste my time? Why am I going to go? You know, I want to be a head coach. I have aspirations to be a head coach, but it's going to be a 20-year route to even be considered a coordinator. You know, I can't even get that position. And so, I think that probably dissuades a lot of people. You know, some of those people may go towards the college ranks for opportunities, but even those opportunities in football aren't as great. There's some, but not as great. So, it's important to have in place someone that looks like you, that shows you that you indeed can get this thing done. And the NFL just hasn't done a good enough job of doing that, or, you know, having people as examples of, you know, this is what you could be. And you mentioned Deion. tremendous job.
Who would have ever guessed?
who would have ever guessed?
I love it.
But can Deion realistically get an opportunity elsewhere? Because, you know, Deion brings a bit of flamboyance to the craft, and that might be a turnoff to an institution that is just so set in their ways. Like, I can't see a Power Five school saying, hey, we're going to go with Deion and all the off the field stuff that he brings to coach our team. I just don't see that as being an option. I hope one day it can happen, but I don't know.
I would love to see him coach at FSU, and I'm a Gator.
So, you're right.
It would be awesome.
You know, Jerry, Brian brought up something about the players' influence in basketball and how that is one possible solution. I'm curious, you know, the heads of the players' union in the NFL for years, I think it was Gene Upshaw, and then it went to Damaris Smith. You have African Americans that serve as heads of the players' union. You have a majority of players. Do you think that in contract negotiations, other labor union talks, there's an opportunity for the players, together with the executive directors of the players' union, to say, you know what, make a change, or we're not. I don't know what. I don't know if we're not taking the field or something, but I feel like there's an opportunity here for the players to be conscientious objectors and make a change.
Well, why would they do that when they see what happened to Colin Kaepernick?
Exactly. You know, Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reed, who I, you know, a guy who we talk about Cap, and you can say maybe he was on the downside of his career, but he still could have played. But Reed was one of the top plays at his position, and he never got a bite again because he took a knee next to Colin. And I just think, like I said earlier, with money, guaranteed money, you have power. And the NFL Players Association, you know, their leadership has been very vocal, but their players can't afford to make that stand because you get eliminated like Kaepernick, and you may never play this game again. And they are just so unwilling to take a risk. And I think that's the big issue. Now, you start giving these guys, you know, 5-6 year guaranteed contracts where they can walk away at $100 million, and you know that's going to be on the table regardless of what you say, then you have the power to say it, and then you have the power in numbers. But until that happens in an NFL, that will never happen. It won't ever happen. You know, their voices won't be as strong as the NBA.
You know, to show you how relatively quickly that changed in the NBA, you remember that Kareem always wanted to be a head coach and didn't even get a sniff. And he was not only probably the greatest underappreciated player of all time, but one of the most intellectually gifted human beings you'll ever listen to. And nobody even considered him for head coach. That would never happen today.
That wouldn't happen today. Kareem would definitely get an opportunity. You know, if you read, you know, Kareem has proven himself to be such a great writer now, and he's so thoughtful in his presentations. Now, I will say, in my opinion, that probably the reason why Kareem didn't get a coaching opportunity, he was an aloof player on the court, and you know, the media didn't get along with him. He didn't have a lot to say to people. He just went about his business, and I think that probably impacted his opportunity to be a head coach. Now, with his mind, does he deserve to be a head coach? Yeah, probably, absolutely. But I think that had he been a warmer individual during his playing days, that it could have turned out differently for him.
You mean like Bill Belichick?
my guy Patrick Ewing didn't get his shot in the NBA. He went back to Georgetown, and we're thankful for that at Georgetown, of course. But I did want to switch the topic just a little bit. We're here on episode 42 in the Jackie Robinson episode, and we've touched on the decreasing participation of Black kids in baseball. Why is that? Do you have a thought on as to why? I think it's like it was 20% at one point. It's down to like 7% in the majors now. But what's going on there?
You know, I did a series with Joe Adell, who plays outfield for the Angels, about a year and a half ago. And, you know, I collaborated with him on a weekly diary. And, you know, he was telling me that there's just a lack of connection between the sport and getting players involved in neighborhoods. Sometimes it's in areas where you don't have the facilities, you know, in baseball, you know, you need some empty space with some cut grass out there, and you need, you know, 9 gloves for the players, and you need, you know, a lot of bats. And I think a lot of areas, they just don't have that. And I think the RBI program that's in different urban areas is trying to address that. But it's been very difficult to overcome. And I think with Black players, they find what's attractive right now is that, you know, I can become probably more famous playing basketball. It's more of a social media following in basketball, more of a social media following in football than you have in baseball. And I think that's a big problem with it. And, you know, you mentioned Jackie Robinson, and it was great that he was able to integrate baseball. And, you know, you have to look at kind of the downside of that integration is that, you know, it killed the Negro Leagues, which was popular in a lot of areas, and that, you know, they drew big fan bases out to those games. And that was decimated when Jackie Robinson came to Major League Baseball. You know, you look at the integration of college sports and the schools like Morgan State and Grambling and Jackson State, they, you know, the top players in the country stayed at these HBCUs, these historically Black colleges and universities. And once the opportunity came to go to other institutions, you know, that kind of, not kind of, it did hurt their program. So, you know, it's that whole integration of sports has been a gift and a curse to, one, Major League Baseball players, I believe, and two, to some of these HBCU schools that can't attract the high profile kids to come play for them, because, you know, how can you compete at Howard University and playing in a gym that's 25 years old when you go to the University of Texas with a $235 million a year athletic budget and facilities that rival anything in professional sports, whether it's football or basketball? And it's just kind of hard. You know, it's easy for a kid to make a decision to be attracted to the glamour than the history.
Well, Michael Jordan didn't help, because he became such an icon and so famous. So many, you know, young Blacks wanted to emulate him and be like Mike. And that wasn't playing baseball on a sandlot.
Yeah, and Mike didn't help because the way he played baseball.
He played baseball. That's right.
Hey Jerry, sure? let me switch gears.
Yeah.
I follow you on social media and was really excited by the fact that you got to interview John Carlos.
Oh, yeah.
Recently. Tell us about that. That had to be a very cool experience.
You know, it's actually, I went out to San Jose State a couple of years ago. It may have been 2018 when, you know, John Carlos ran for the San Jose State track program, and that program dissolved over years. And so they brought it back in 2017, 2018. And I actually got out there and met him at that event. And it was just an honor to sit there and meet him. But when I found out that he was in town for a college basketball game, it was Michigan against, I think, Prairie View. And they had a panel discussion the day before that game. And when I found out that he was on the panel, I just had to rush out and meet him. And, you know, such an honor to talk to a guy who took a lot of risk in the 68 Olympics by raising his hand and bringing attention to some problems that were happening within sports. And, you know, he lost a lot. You know, he had threats against him. You know, he was considered to be, you know, un-American in his actions, but he is as vocal as ever. And it was just an honor to meet him out there.
Yeah, I read that interview. He seems like he's as feisty as
he
was in 1968.
Absolutely.
I love it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was great. It was great.
That must have been a really cool experience for you. So anybody else? Anyone have any questions?
It's great to have you.
This is a discussion. This has been really...
Yeah, I'm just gonna say, Mike, special. Man, you got the Knicks background. I'm still a believer. Last year, we came back and we made the playoffs and we looked pretty good. It's been shaky this year, but I still have faith and hope. And
Jerry, you can actually confirm something for us that we've been curious about. Phelan did go to college.
Listen, I tell you, I have a fondness for Jerry that he probably doesn't even realize. But I don't know if you remember that we were in college, conservative period, with a lot of conservative people. And I would be up there for Amnesty International and all this stuff. And there'd be like four people who showed up, and you were always one of them. And a real calming influence. I appreciated it.
Yeah. You know, we'd gather around campus, around the Mud building, you know.
Yeah.
And so that was great times. You know, I went back to Ohio Wesleyan a couple of years ago. I was in town for a wedding, and, you know, I just walked through campus, and it just, I was put back to those days in 1980s.
Yeah.
It's crazy how you just kind of go back to that era and you can remember things being in that place. So, yeah, it was really great to get back on campus.
So Phelan did not go to college in the 50s?
Oh, Mike, these guys are harder
than that. I know. They're all jealous. They're all jealous that I still have my hair.
Well, thank you. Is that why guys are wearing hats here? Is that the reason?
Yeah, Oh, yeah.
It's all up there. It's all up there.
Yeah, sort of.
I shave my head every day. It's a choice. It's a lifestyle choice.
Thanks for joining us, Jerry. All right,
thank you so much,
Jerry. You guys have a great podcast. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I really, you know, appreciate you guys having me on anytime.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I'd love to. And keep up the good work. We really do enjoy
Everybody follow Jerry Bembry on The Undefeated. Make sure you follow Jerry.
Yes. Absolutely. And I'll let you guys know when the TV piece is going to air on Saturday. I'll send Mike a message and let you know.
Awesome. All right.
Please do.
All right, take care.
Thanks, Jerry. All right, what's up?
That was awesome.
All right.
He's a good Brewster, dude.
Thanks for doing that. That was Brewster. Awesome.
He's
really
a great
enjoyed
guy.
That.
That was awesome.
Yeah. That was good stuff. That was really
We're a legitimate fun. Podcast now, guys.
It's a great opportunity to skip talking about Philadelphia sports. So thanks.
Right. You got away with one today.
Yes, Jerry.
Jerry saved you.
That's right. So we do want to pick up and you know, obviously that was fun and that was something unique for us. Really lucky. And again, thanks to Mike for setting that up. But let's do talk just a little bit about the NFL this week. House, you want to take us in?
So did you guys know that the NFL hired the guy that produced the Survivor to produce the NFL? Because that's pretty much what the NFL has come down to at this point. Like, seriously, who is going to survive this season? It is unbelievable. You know, sorry to our number one, number two overall fantasy picks, but scratch off CMC, scratch off Dalvin Cook. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I think we can scratch off the Cam Newton experiment.
Didn't go well.
Derrick Henry was the third pick in our draft.
Yeah,
that's right. They're all gone.
I really hope that bettors are not forgetting about our locks. Please do not listen to our predictions about teams like. It was only a couple weeks ago that Pope had the Cowboys and the Packers in the NFC Championship, and a couple weeks before that we were ready to bronze the Rams and shine up the trophy for them. I mean, let's start there. Let's just start there. What the hell is going on with the Cowboys and the Rams? They're dumpster fires.
Pope, you're on mute.
He is speechless.
I want to hear from the Cowboy.
Yeah,
I'll take the Cowboys. I mean, you know, Amari Cooper goes out with COVID because he's unvaccinated. And we were talking about how's that eventually going to impact. And that has had a big time impact on the team, because I'm pretty sure he got other people who have COVID, and as in our head coach who has COVID and will miss the Saints game, which means we might actually win.
That might be the best thing for you.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah,
for sure.
Part of the strategy.
Are
but with Amari out, and then we lost CeeDee Lamb to a concussion during the Chiefs game, they've just been out of sync. Dak hadn't had the weapons that he needs. Obviously, Zeke, I don't know whether he's on the back end of his career or, you know, he's got a bum leg, but Tony Pollard is clearly a better runner right now than Zeke. And the defense is giving up points as in bunch. So whatever the magic they had at the beginning of the year, they lost 3 of 4. They need to get it back. Now their, you know, schedule's still pretty favorable, but Cowboy Packer NFC Championship game looking a little shaky right now. But there's still time, and I still have faith in this team. Thursday night's a huge game. They cannot go to Saints and lose again. That'd be 4 of 5. And then I think the wheels will be starting to come off at that point.
And I think Matthew Stafford is really hurt and is just not telling anyone, but he's having accuracy problems, which he normally does not.
Well, the Packers are a good team. You're half right, Pope.
Yeah.
Right. And yesterday's, I mean, that's a tough game for any team to go to Green Bay in a,
how'd you guys like that stat that I texted you about when Rodgers is ahead at halftime at Lambeau? Yeah. Now he's 73-1-1. And they only were up by 3 points at halftime.
I hear you that Aaron Rodgers is good and the Pack are tough and all that stuff, but the Rams had impenetrable fortress defense, and they're like a sieve right now. I mean, 28-point Von Miller and all these guys. Aaron Donald, Patrick Ramsey, what is going on besides Stafford? What's going on with the Rams defense? It's not good.
Were they 0-3 with Von Miller, aren't they?
They can reload in the draft next year. Oh, no, they can't. Like for the next 6 years.
Yeah. Not for the next 6 years, right?
Yeah. So, not a good future.
And they have a tough schedule, too.
I mean, you got to win the Super Bowl. You went all in.
Yeah, I mean, does the quality of play, I mean, it just seems like there's no consistency and these teams are up and down. I mean, is this a parity thing, or does this have anything to do with the new preseason? Right? Wasn't this the first year where they had one less game? I mean, I know that was kind of a meaningless game, but I don't know. I'm just thinking about that right now. I haven't given a lot of thought, but is there anything to that? I mean, it's just really weird. Usually you have teams that are clicking by now. It doesn't seem like anyone is really clicking.
Except for the Mac attack.
Yeah. Yes.
True.
That's the story of the NFL season, that Belichick literally took 1 year off with Cam disastering at quarterback. He gets a first round pick that everyone laughs at him for, and they're right back where they started. And I'll tell you, I know the Cowboys had one of the biggest ratings of all time in that Thanksgiving game against the Raiders, but you put Belichick against Brady in this year's Super Bowl, you can forget about every ratings thing ever.
We're not making the Super Bowl.
I don't know how anyone can say that the 9-2 Packers are not clicking, or that the 9-2 Cardinals are not clicking.
They're 8-3. Who? Get it right.
Who?
Cardinals.
Packers. Packers have 3 losses.
Packers are 9-3.
Yeah. Or 9.
They're 9-3. All right. And the Cards who had a bye are 9-2, I believe.
Correct.
Yeah, that's right.
So they're clicking.
They're beat up. I mean, they're going to need it. They're going to need a healthy Kyler Murray and a healthy DeAndre Hopkins. They've lost J.J. Watt. I mean, they're going to need to be healthy to make a run.
They're looking well. That's the problem. Look out for the 49ers in the West. They're coming on.
They are coming
on. Except their stud, who set a pretty remarkable record, Deebo Samuel, is the first NFL wide receiver to score as a running play in 4 consecutive games. I mean, he's a definite dual threat as both a runner and a receiver, but he's got a serious groin injury. He's going to be out.
He's having an MRI today on his. So we'll see.
So, what are you guys' takeaways from this week? Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. I've got my Iron Bowl champion hat on with.
Oh God!
And my takeaway is that Tua mania in Miami could be real. 27 of 31. He is. They've won 4 in a row. There was some thought that Tua would not make it this year at all through the year. And he's come back strong, and as has Waddle. So look out for Tua, look out for Mac, and adios Cam. It's been a good week for the home team, Alabama Crimson Tide.
You want to talk about Jalen Hurts?
We could talk about Jalen.
I'll talk about Jalen Hurts because he's part of my takeaway. So I was watching the Buccaneers Colts game. Did you guys see we won that game?
Congrats!
Happy for you. I know y'all are all rooting for the Bucs. But Carson Wentz had an unbelievable first half, and he really played a great game. The loss was not his fault. Like, you can't field a punt.
He didn't play a great second half, though.
A lot was not his fault. I mean, he had one One bad interception.
One bad interception.
Yeah. I mean, did they forget they had Jonathan Taylor, the potential MVP?
They finally did. And then, yeah. But I'm sitting there at the half and he's throwing his third touchdown. And I'm thinking to myself as I look at the Eagles score and it's zero. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, why? What did the, and Toby, this is kind of a question for you. Like, what? Why? Why did they get rid of Carson Wentz? He is a really good quarterback. And I'm not real sure on Jalen Hurts maybe being in the NFL in the next 3 years. So
it's a combination of ego and people wanting to say, like, I'm right, you're wrong. And this narrative that gets written about injury prone players when the injuries weren't really, they were fluke injuries. I mean, you know, when Jadeveon Clowney spears at your head and that knocks you out, that doesn't make you injury prone. That makes you on the raw end of a, you know, of a dirty play. I agree with you. Listen, most of the Philadelphia, believe it or not, they are not in favor of Carson. They're in favor, at least for now, of Jalen. I have always been on the Carson bandwagon. There's no question as a passer, he is a better quarterback than Jalen. And guys, I don't know what you think, but I do think you need to throw the ball to be an effective quarterback in the NFL.
Right. Well, you know, like you guys Lamar watch Jackson? You guys watch Succession?
Mm-mm. Of course. Yeah.
Logan said to Ken.
A little behind.
Yeah, Logan says to Ken, the reason that he's not ready for CEO is you have to be a killer. You're not a killer. I don't think Carson is a killer. I think he's a good, good quarterback. But with the game on the line in the fourth quarter, he just isn't a killer. He's you're just anticipating him turning the ball over at that stage of the game.
Yeah, that's a fair point. My second takeaway is, I think we're seeing a sad ending to Big Ben. Like,
yeah, that was my takeaway.
What's sad about it?
I hope he doesn't want. No, right, you love the Steelers. What are you talking about?
I don't love Big Ben.
Yeah, like just please retire after the season. Like, I hope he doesn't try to keep going because it's going fast. Father Time is up in the 10th, 12th round, and he's going down.
It's happening. They're moving on.
It's happening.
Brewster, what's your – go ahead, Bison.
Well, I'll give you a takeaway. It's more of a question, but what is wrong with the Chargers? Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone's talking about the other LA team, but what is wrong with the Chargers? I mean, I think at one point we thought they had the next Joe Montana and people were penciling them in for the Super Bowl. And now, I mean, what is happening?
The offensive line is horrible. It's like Swiss cheese. In that game Sunday, Herbert was throwing rushed every down. He was throwing off his back foot. He was trying to throw before he got hit. He never got to set his feet and throw the ball. Their offensive line is like the Giants' offensive line. It's like a jailbreak every time it's a passing down.
So you're saying I should throw away your gambling bet for them to win the Super Bowl?
Yeah, absolutely. The two teams that should draft nothing but offensive linemen are the Chargers and the Giants.
Well, my takeaway is that they need to change the Thanksgiving lineup. I mean, I'm grateful for the Cowboys Raiders exciting game, but we got to scratch this thing. You know, talk about white power owners that are taking over and dictating things. The Ford family needs to give it up. And the Lions got to get off Thanksgiving. Right. And I'm not so sure that the Cowboys should get one every single year too. And I guess preseason, the Bills Saints had a potentially good matchup, but they are really getting it wrong on the matchups on Thanksgiving. Yep. And that tradition needs to change. That's
so another thing the NBA does right. Every Christmas, they have a powerhouse lineup of about 3-4 games that you just definitely want to see, you know, like the Lakers, Celtics or whatever, whoever's hot. They don't have crappy teams playing on Christmas ever.
Right.
Well, it's going to be hard for the Cowboys to give it up when they got the best regular season rating ever for that game on Thursday.
Of course they did.
Because everybody liked to see them lose.
Right.
Well, but that's good for ratings.
So and they were
going to get knocked out of that slot.
They were happy to comply.
I think some people just were ready to move on from their families. Not me, but I think some people just wanted to turn on the telly.
My takeaway is that there is absolutely no way that a Super Bowl contender comes out of the AFC North. This division is so anemic. There's not one team in that division that puts together back-to-back good games. And as soon as anyone says one of these teams is good, you get a performance like you did out of the Browns, Steelers, and Ravens this weekend. Even though the Ravens won, they only won because they played the Browns, whose quarterback is so hurt they could only score 10 points. I mean, we all thought that Lamar was the man a couple weeks ago, and he throws three interceptions in the second quarter and then a fourth later in the game. I mean, to Toby's point, you have to be able to throw the ball downfield in order to win as a quarterback, and he cannot do it on certain days.
I do not believe in Baltimore.
Other days, he looks great. There's so much inconsistency in that division that they're never going to go far in the playoffs.
All right, here's what we got.
Look,
we got some things we got to get done here, starting with our locks, but I am putting us on a speed round to move through the rest of the agenda, fellas. We got to get through this. We're going to start. Let's go. House, you got it with the Plaxico locks.
Okay, basically we all suck, but we need to be rooting for Milk at this point, because Milk is 4-7 and he's got the football team tonight -1.5. We need Milk tonight so that we can have some respectability, because right now Rooster and I are 2-10. My God.
That is wow.
Pope is 3-9 and Bison is a lusty 4-8 after last week's games. Just so the fans know, Rooster and I took the Chargers. Pope took the Cowboys. Bison took the Vikings, but Milk has the football team. So by the time this is produced, maybe Milk gets close to 5-7, which I guess makes us a juggernaut, which would match the football team from last year. All right. So this week, I'm going to start out to say that I guess I'm going to have this Tua mania. I'm going with the raging Dolphins, who are -3 home against that pathetic Giants team. I'm taking the Dolphins in week 13.
It's a revenge pick.
I'm with you. House. That's my pick.
All right, Pope. We got the Dolphins. We got two on there. Who else wants Tua mania?
I'm going against the Lions. There's the line is only -7. Vikings coming off a tough loss are going to take it out on the Lions.
Will Kirk Cousins find the center for a snap?
Doesn't matter. He's playing the Lions. They're playing the Lions.
I loved that pick, Rooster. I'm got the Lions -7. Count it.
You've got it too? You got the Lions.
No, I'm taking the Lions.
He's taking the Lions. I'm taking the Vikings.
I'm taking the opposite.
And in a get-right game, the Rams cover over the Jags.
Okay, we got
notice nobody took the Eagles over the Jets.
By the way, that's Rams. You might see Gardner Minshew this week. The Rams -13. Got it.
Yeah.
All right.
Gardner, yes.
All right. All right, next up, Milk. I believe there's some things in college football you wanted to address.
Oh, are we talking college football?
If you must.
A lot is happening right now. We've got coaching changes that we need to discuss. Lincoln Riley just absolutely screwed Oklahoma, and he's heading to USC. I'd love everyone's thought on that.
Why did he screw? Why is he screwing them?
He's scared of the SEC.
I agree.
He is. And he likes to make $135 million over 10 years.
Yeah. I mean, why is he screwing? What does he owe Oklahoma? I mean, they wouldn't have fired him if he had a couple bad seasons.
Well, it's very kind of Lane Kiffin reminiscent of him leaving Tennessee in the middle of the night and heading to USC. I think Oklahoma fans were like, why? You know, we win 10 games every year. We're all in the national championship picture every season. You're going to go to USC, but I don't disagree. If I'm Lincoln Riley, I'm sitting there going, I got to play in the SEC in a year. And probably I'm going to be put in the West Division. So I'm going to be playing Alabama every single season. Yeah, I'll go to USC. And I'll be in a recruiting hotbed.
And I'd take a pay cut to move from Oklahoma to California.
Yes. I love it. Congratulations to Pope. If the stupid overtime rules weren't completely shady, they probably would have lost. But this two-point conversion thing after three overtimes, that
needs to get thrown out. Look, if the Auburn running back just doesn't go out of bounds, Alabama doesn't have enough time to drive.
That's true. You got to play Georgia now next weekend. So let's talk about that. If Georgia beats Alabama, Cincy's in, Michigan is in, that's going to leave one spot.
You got to beat Iowa.
I think Oklahoma State's going to jump Notre Dame tonight. You have to. They just beat Oklahoma. You might have Michigan, Cincy, and Oklahoma State in the playoff this year. If you guys who think college football is boring don't like that, I don't know what else you want.
Georgia's going to smoke them all.
About the only thing that would be interesting would be Michigan and Notre Dame in the playoff at this point. If Michigan and Notre Dame.
I mean, they could.
I don't think so either, but that would be fun. That would be fun.
I thought the Michigan-Ohio State game was fun to watch.
Absolutely.
Really, that was awesome.
Screw
the
Ohio
snow State. And everything.
Yeah. That was great. And they punched them in the face.
Yep.
But it will be a Michigan move for them to lose to Baylor this weekend.
You mean lose to Iowa?
Iowa.
Sorry.
Iowa.
No, but it'll be an Oklahoma State move for them to lose to Baylor. In fact, I think Baylor's going to win that game. And that might open up a Notre Dame slot.
Then Notre Dame gets
in. Oh, gosh.
And it's Nace's worst nightmare.
Let's talk about, and I realize, that it's probably a remote possibility, but if Alabama wins, obviously Georgia's still in.
Yes.
And then chaos ensues. And is it possible that an Oklahoma State and a Michigan could knock Cincy out?
I don't think you could knock Cincy out at this point.
Then
no.
So Oklahoma State beats OU and then they beat Baylor back-to-back top 10s and you're going to deny them one loss over Cincy?
Well, then Toby Phelan and Nace will never watch college football ever again.
Right.
They will lose half the fan
base. That's true.
How about when Notre Dame ends up in and Cincy's out, even though Notre Dame lost to Cincinnati?
That would be a crime.
Oh yeah, exactly. They beat Notre Dame
at Notre Dame.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, like they have to go. You have to put them.
All right, Milk. Anything else you want to talk about on college football?
No, I hate the Billy Napier, whatever his name is, pick.
Oh yes!
Oh yeah! Congrats!
Whatever.
Milk, you just got the best that the Sun Belt Conference has to offer. You should be happy.
You know what, Milk? I'm going to say this: you wanted the big name.
I wanted Stoops to come back.
Don't always look at the shiniest object. This might be a good thing.
We've tried this before. I'm cautiously optimistic.
Apparently, he's a disciple of Satan, so you should be fine.
So was Jim McElwain, and he was making up fake death threats, and he got fired.
I love your. I want Deion Sanders to go to Florida State. That's awesome.
Yeah, I know.
That would be amazing. I love it. I would love that. I would love it.
What a train wreck that would be.
Oh no! I'm all for it.
Oh God. All right. Well, that gets us. That's enough talking about boring college football. Pope, are we punching someone?
It's this week's punchable face.
Oh, we are punching someone who's been trying to throw a lot of punches this week after he got punched. So there's a lot of punches going on. You guys probably saw the LeBron James, Isaiah Stewart brawl in the Palace in Detroit earlier this week. LeBron was being locked basically from getting a rebound. And, it probably was a foul on Stewart, and LeBron threw an elbow. I don't think he intentionally meant to do what he did, but he opened him Stewart up like a tomato can. Look, one of Tyson's old tomato cans back in the day. A big old gash above the eye. He was spurting blood everywhere. Obviously, Stewart's pissed. He goes after LeBron once. They hold him back. He goes after LeBron twice. They hold him back. They're walking him out, and he breaks loose, and he goes after LeBron for a third time. And this time, my favorite part of it was DeAndre Jordan steps in the way and played the best defense he's had in years. So Stewart was not able to get to LeBron because of DeAndre. And then he broke loose in the tunnel, and they were concerned, like on the news, I mean, on the radio cast, they were talking about how the Lakers should be concerned that Stewart would run all the way down the tunnel and come back out and go after LeBron. So, I mean, yeah, it was a nasty cut. LeBron should have probably been ejected for a flagrant two, but it wasn't intentional. And Stewart just went nuts, and he needs to control his temper. And for that, I punch him in the other eye, in the left eye. And that's my punch of the week.
It looked intentional to me, that elbow.
Oh, come on.
I thought it was an intentional.
Well, I'm no LeBron fan.
Took a big swing with it.
No, he didn't take a big swing.
That was incidental. But Stewart went totally mental. He went totally mental. The fact that he got two games for like a madman running around the court was crazy.
He did. He lost his shit. It was completely lost his shit.
Didn't it remind you of Malice in the Palace when Ron Artest went out to the fight the fans back in
04? That was awesome. Yes. Yeah.
Not everybody can take a punch, man.
Rooster knows a thing or two.
Oh God. All right. Well, maybe a lasso to end the show. House.
You know, we all talk about how hard it is to repeat in sports. And so this week on the SMQBs, we are going to give a lasso and break new ground on this show as we give the lasso to an incredible athlete that repeated as defending champion in the National Dog Show. The Scottish Deerhound Claire last week came to the City of Brotherly Love in Philadelphia, and like her grandmother Hickory before, who won Westminster in 2011, Claire brought it back for back to back. Let's see if the Bucks can pull off a Claire this year. I am giving the lasso to the Scottish Deerhound Claire. Way to go.
I'm gonna say, here I thought we were all of a sudden a legit podcast.
Yeah, really.
What happened?
I'm gonna start watching college football now.
I never thought we would talk about the Westminster Dog Show. Wow. But it had just happened.
Ouch.
It did.
Go Claire.
Boy.
Hey, Bison, before we go, how surprised are you by the Max Scherzer deal?
Well, I think, you know, I had that on here as sort of a quick hitter to mention. Good for Max. He's a bulldog. He just wants to pitch and win games. But, man, that's a lot of money to be putting into a guy who's, you know, prone to break down. I mean, you know, even in 19, remember, he missed the start in game 5 of the World Series because of neck spasms, and he hadn't pitched from like June 7th to August 18th that season. And then this year, you know, right when the team needed him the most, he wasn't able to come back and pitch. He's great, and he's probably going to have another great year, but three-year deal.
It was a three-year deal, $130 million. My point, though, is I think there are at least 3-4 contenders who would have paid him that. Why did he go to the Mets?
Now, I don't know.
I mean, maybe he's won a World Series going back-to-back with another pitcher like Strasburg and, you know, Scherzer, like DeGrom and Scherzer. Like, that's all you need is two pitchers to win a 7-game series. And they're the best.
The Nats had a few hitters on that team, too, and the Mets don't really.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about that.
Well, the Dodgers are getting broken up, as you guys saw before the pod.
Yeah.
Seager's got a big old contract with the Rangers.
Another kind of take the money and not aspire to win move.
Baseball is way more exciting in the offseason than the regular season.
The hot stove. Hey, I want to pour one out, guys, before
Pope, you got the last word. Yeah, you got the last word, Pope.
I'm going to pour one out on my virtual background, I have Lee Elder when he, for the first time at the Masters, the ceremonial tee shot, the first day of the Masters, they included him. He was the first African American to be at the Masters in 1975. He had a great impact on golf and society in general. Very, very well respected. It's a huge loss. I'm just glad that he was able to be included in the ceremonial tee shot this year, knowing that he was so sick. And I would like to pour one out for Lee Elder.
Lee Elder, and man.
To Lee Elder. And, you know, before we go, I think we all know that we're going to dedicate this podcast to another lover of sports and someone who made this podcast possible because he brought us Chris Nace. So this one's for Barry Nace.
Here's
the Barry.
A great
sports man, a great man. Here's to Barry.
Great life, well lived.
Cheers. My dad spent a lot of nights falling asleep in front of whether there was the Wizards, the Caps, the Nats, or the football team. He fell asleep to a lot of sporting games. So,
but not listening to this podcast, apparently.
Right. I liked hearing that he did Philly's Dream Week. That made my day.
That is so cool.
He did. He did.
That's awesome. And by the way, Nace, the answer to the question earlier on text, if the Washington wins tonight, they're the seventh seed.
Yeah.
Let's go team. Let's go team.
They're in the playoffs. Team.